Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 209 of Nerd Pride Radio. 209, enjoy Gin 209, a gin that reflects the heritage of small batch handcrafted distilling, but is a unique and modern 21st century spirit. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's probably like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. My co-host this week is Mycoplasma pneumoniae. There we go. I got it right.
And Noah Jones.
And Noah. I was going to say and Noah. I promise.
Yeah, you quote unquote promise.
That's right. That's right. Before we start, though, guess what? It's time for yet another installment in our all too frequent segment. Mike was wrong! Wicked. Oh, wicked wrong? I'm sorry. He's reading it off the notes. You want to do it again?
Yeah.
Mike was wicked wrong! Okay.
There we go.
So, last week, I was asked about the bloodiest game of paranoia we've ever played, and I was mistaken on two counts. I was correct that the highest body count was probably from the Mark IV adventure, but I estimated that at like 50, 52, and it's only because I don't know that 6 times 6 is 36. I was for some reason making it 48 in my head. And so actually the correct answer is probably around 40. 40 bodies in player bodies in one game. And then the bloodiest game that we ever played would be the last one where we played with the light bots. And in that one, Ronster's character was a werewolf. And there was several times that he would wolf out and then he would just tear people to bits. But there was one where he did it in a crowded, panicked hallway where there must have been, you know, hundreds and hundreds of clones running hither and yon, and he wound up, there was no specific body count because everyone just kind of ran, but, you know, I'm guessing he must have killed 60, 70 people all on his own there. It was pretty bad, if not more. So there you go. Now I've set the record straight. So, on top of that, before we get started, updates! Yeah, I think I got walking pneumonia. So I was feeling better. And then I wasn't feeling better, and then I went to the doctor, and I got the cortisol inhaler, and so I thought I was going to feel better, and now it turns out that I'm not really feeling better after that either. And so I'm going to keep going on this for a little bit, but man, if I don't feel better at the end of this treatment, then I'll go back to him. He'll probably run the blood test that will confirm for sure that I have walking pneumonia, and then I don't know if there's really anything to do from there. So, walking pneumonia sounds really scary to me, and so I looked it up, because that's what I do, and it turns out...
It's a disease with legs!
Yes, it is little viruses with legs. As it turns out, walking pneumonia is actually the mildest form of pneumonia, and thus a lot of people can be up and about and functioning perfectly normally while they have it, thus... the phrase walking pneumonia. And, you know, for example, in my case, I don't have any fever, chills, no, I'm not even stuffed up. I don't even have the cold symptoms. It's literally, I just feel like I can't breathe half the time, or now most of the time. Because with all the coughing, especially at night, Man, my chest just hurts. You can just feel it's just muscle soreness from coughing so much, and so I'm not sleeping very well. But, you know, other than that, yeah, I feel great, but it's, you know, probably walking pneumonia. We'll see. So if I don't record next weekend, for example, that's probably why. It's probably because this stuff is still lingering on, but we'll see how it goes. So, all right, now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list, and the very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record.
Sounds gross, but it really isn't.
It's not gross at all, you lucky dogs. So, straight into my master list. Whoa, emergency, I had to go post up listener betrayal. I completely forgot to do that. So, now, where was I? Did I remember to say gaming table?
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games. If it's on my gaming table, then I'm here to share it with you. Hey, guess what we did this week? We playtested some more God Ball. Oh my God, Dave is doing such good work on this game. So much fun. We set down some guiding, or for those of you who aren't familiar, because I don't know, you haven't listened to the last six episodes. God Ball is a game that my friend Dave and I came up with, while we were at dinner at Gen Con a couple years ago. And we've been working on it since Gen Con this year. And the idea is that the gods are having a contest. They're playing ball to determine, I don't know, they're settling an argument. And so they've got their champions out there, and then the gods influence the board and the game as things go on, and the champions try to carry the ball from Mount Olympus back to their home temple. And that's the whole object of the game so far, because so far no one's ever done it, so we don't know if it's possible to score a point yet, but we're having fun trying. And what we did is we set down the guiding principles of our game. So, and I'm telling you, if you're working on your own game stuff, this is so helpful. The idea of what is it that we want this game to be? What is it that feels, you know, what's the feel that we want? What's the, and then every time we play test, we can go back and go, okay, are we matching up to these things? Because if we're not, then okay, maybe these aren't the things we want, but if, you know, but more than likely, if we're not matching our original principles, then all right, let's see how we can tighten it up or change things or make it work. And so our guiding principles for God Ball are, it has to be fast. It has to be epic in feel. Every turn has to be productive in some way. And then our last one that we set down for ourselves is no dice, right? Because when gods are taking action on the field, when Zeus is stepping in, there's no luck about it. Gods just do things. And so therefore we decided dice just weren't even involved in this. Either you can do it or you can't do it, and there's no in between. So, and so the way it's been working out, yeah, fast. I think we've got the fast part down. Like every turn you go and, you know, you get to move one hex on the board, you get to take one hero action, you play one card, and then move on. And, even with us playing on Roll20, which is an online platform for this sort of thing. Even playing on Roll20, it's moving really quick. I mean, like we can feel that if we were sitting around the table playing it live and we didn't have to type everything out and didn't have to, you know, double explain stuff because it's hard to read the cards on the table and all this stuff, we can feel that, God, it would just be whizzing by. I mean, we'd be able to play, you know, 2-3 rounds of it in, you know, 10 minutes. And so, which is really exciting to us. We really like that it's moving quickly. The second part, gotta feel epic. It's gotta feel like gods are actually interfering in a soccer match or a free-for-all, whatever this thing is. And, man, Dave's brother, Dan, this week, he pulled off a move that was just, it's like, yeah, that's exactly what's supposed to be happening. And every game we have one of these moments, but this one was just above and beyond. Dan doesn't listen to the podcast, so I'm sorry, I can't tell him this directly, right here, but I'll send him a note. But, it was, that we're all moving in on the ball. This is, it's always round one is everyone's kind of jockeying for position, trying to get close to the ball, trying to, you know, rearrange your cards so that you've got a good hand for when things get really, really weird. And then round two is just mayhem. It's just everything's bouncing off everything else. And so we had just gotten into round two, and we get to that part where finally someone grabs the ball And the minute someone has their hands on the ball, he plays a card that throws up a mountain range. It's like, you know, he just sweeps his hand and a mountain range pops up and winds up knocking the ball loose. You know, two of the champions wind up getting knocked down completely. The ball goes loose. He winds up making a grab for it. Well, now he's put all of us in a position where we can't get up and get to him, in the next turn or so because, well, there's a mountain range there. And so it's like, oh my God, he could make a break for it. Like he could actually be out in the open. Now it turns out he pulled this off early in the game. So everybody else had a whole bunch of cards left that they could wind up stomping on him for it. And, you know, we knocked things around again, but, man, it was fun. Yeah. What's up?
Who was he playing as?
He was playing as Hera. I was Zeus. Hera? Yeah. I was Zeus and, Dave was Poseidon and, Phoebe was playing Hermes and Dan was playing Hera and, man, just kicked butt. So it was really good. I think Dave warned me early on. He's like, oh, yeah, my brother's too good at this sort of thing. Give him two or three more playtests, he'll be kicking our butts every time. I think yeah. He's absolutely right about that.
Dad,
yes,
by
son.
The way, one move of Poseidon has to be an earthquake because Poseidon can just do that. Poseidon is waters and earthquakes.
Yes, we may be having – oh, man, Poseidon pulled off a really good move that I was trying to block Hera's escape. So I threw up a small C to block her way because she's no good crossing water, or at least her champion isn't. And then as soon as I laid out the water, Dave was over there going, oh, please be water, please be water. And I laid down water and he's like, oh yeah. And so then on his turn, Poseidon has a card that if there's already existing water,
yeah,
he can triple it. And so he winds up sending out, he takes my little body of water and then he winds up putting up extra oceans next to it. So it's like blocking her whole path. It was really cool. So yeah, all right. So we've got fast, we've got epic, we've got productive. So even if there's nothing that you can do right this moment, your turn still has to feel like it means something. And so we've got that okay, if you don't have a card that you can play, or a move that you can make, then you take a resting turn and you wind up, you're still getting stuff out of it. You can trade in cards or you can get extra points back or you can, and that seems to be working out really well. And then the last one, no dice. That one's easy to stick to. We just don't put any dice in it. So we've been really happy with the way the game's going so far. And like I said, Dave's put in the lion's share of the work. But what I'm working on right now is taking the rules that we've got that he's written out and going to try and tighten them up, make sure everything makes sense, do the proofreading and this kind of stuff, and then plug all the cards into some kind of print-and-play version so that we can actually run off some copies of this because I would love to be able to play it live with my kids, take it down to the gaming store and play it with friends and strangers down there.
I'm Aries.
Yeah. Oh, you want to be Aries? Yeah, you think so. Aries is in there. Yeah, it's Aries and Aphrodite are the other two that we've got to start with. Pretty sure that's the set. So, yeah, that'll be our starting six. But, man, it's just going so good. We're having a really good time. And now, again, you know, thanks to Dave, he keeps pushing for more playtests and more stuff. And so it looks like we're actually going somewhere with it. So hopefully, I mean, like I said, I'll keep you guys posted, but man, we're having such a good time. I don't think there's anything else for the gaming table. Well, still playing Paranoia. Man, we're up to like 60 pages of material for this one. People are dropping like flies. In fact, I think, yeah, the last post I sent out was entitled Like Flies, because that's what was happening. So Paranoia is awesome, you guys. Awesome. But, alright, enough gaming table. Let's move on to the science corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. I got two semi-related issues today. One is about science being wrong, and the other is about being wrong in general. So, first, I was listening to Adam Ruins Everything, which... you've seen Adam Ruins Everything. They do the little snippets on YouTube. You know, they'll give you like 3 minutes or 5 minutes worth of stuff, and it's usually pretty interesting. And then he's got a full show that appears on True TV, which I don't have True TV, and so I don't actually watch his show. But he does have a companion podcast where whatever topic it was that they're going over each week, he takes one of the experts that they consulted for the show and just sits down for an hour-long interview with them to talk about their specific topic. And it's just fascinating. I love listening to it. I think Adam Ruins Everything is a very smart show. It is very educational and informative. I think they are well researched and very careful about when they make mistakes, coming back and making sure that they correct things and that they stay up to date with the situation as things change. And I just really like, Adam Ruins Everything. I have a lot of respect for the show. And so the podcast, a lot of fun. And, in this particular one, they had a guy on, a professor, Brian Nozick, and he was talking about the reproducibility of science, of, you know, because one of the cornerstones of our, science is, you know, you have to follow the scientific method. Everything has to be, you know, very carefully, measured and tested, and you have to have a control group, and you have, you guys know the scientific method. You know the whole process. But one of the things about it is your results need to be reproducible because, yeah, great that you found this and great that you had a, you know, a very careful, serious experiment designed and that you did everything perfectly and here's the results you got. But if no one else can reproduce those results, then they don't do you a whole lot of good. And so his concern, this Professor Nozick, his concern is science all that reproducible nowadays? Because people don't seem to be as focused on it, anymore because, and this is, you know, a product of our current media and publishing environment for science, is that, you know, redoing someone else's, experiments just to verify that, yep, they were right, it worked, is not, it's not flashy, it's not sexy, it's not the kind of thing that gets you a lot of notoriety, if you get it published, and people are always wanting the next big sexy thing, and so it's not that this science doesn't go on, but it doesn't go on as much as maybe we would like, for science, and so, he went about running his own study where, they recruited all sorts of, different scientists to take part in this. I think he said there were like 217 co-authors to their paper or something like this. And they tried to reproduce the results of 100 different scientific papers that had been published. And I don't know how they chose those. I wasn't paying attention to that part. But, they went ahead and, you know, each of these groups of scientists would go through and try and reproduce, one particular experiment. And out of the 100 that they tried to reproduce, only 36 were reproducible. All right. So only 36 did they actually verify that, well, yeah, so far, that seems to hold up. And that seems like a really low number, right? And so why? I mean, does it mean that people are doing bad science? And yeah, not really. No, maybe we need to do a better job of identifying confounding variables. Maybe the exact procedure wasn't documented well enough or wasn't explained well enough in the paper, for them to do an exact, recreation of what they did. Maybe the attempts at reproduction were flawed. You know, or maybe even some of these apparently very different results are actually within the spread of random chance. I mean, maybe this is just a very normal distribution of probabilities. We don't know, but we do know that 36 of them were able to be reproduced and the other 64 were not, two-thirds. And so here's the best part, though. When he's talking about it, he says, yeah, but, you know, you can't trust these numbers for sure because I just did one study. I mean, honestly, he says, until someone goes around trying to reproduce my results and we see that it's actually confirmed, you know, and he was saying, hopefully we try this several times. The whole point is that you try and reproduce early experiments. And then the more we go through it, the more times we can confirm these results, the more certain we are, as a body of science to say that, yes, this is a thing that is true because multiple people have done it and it works every time. And so he says, yeah, he only got 36 out of 100 for reproducibility. He said, but, you know, maybe his number's off. Who knows? And it was just, it was really cool to hear him talking about it that way. And that was, what I liked best about him, his attitude about science in general, his attitude about the possibility of being wrong, his attitude about the self-correcting nature of science. It was just so positive and upbeat. This guy was great to listen to because he's identifying that, yeah, there's an issue here. Obviously, he said, but science is a good thing. And yes, there are some flawed people and maybe there are some cheaters out there. And maybe there's, you know, there's always bad apples in any cart. He said, but in general, he said, people are trying to do the best science they possibly can. And, And, you know, if it's a matter of things are being unduly influenced in some way, then okay, let's help root out why that's happening. Or if it's that we're not, you know, that there's certain elements of it that we are systematically, missing because we're just not thinking about it the right way. Well, then let's get on that. He says, we'll figure it out and we'll make science better. That's the whole point of continuing to do experiments. And it was just, it was so positive. It was really heartwarming. I liked listening to him. And then, more than that, and this is the second part of this, that's about science being wrong. But then he made some comments that got me thinking about it, and just the idea of being wrong in general. And you could see, as he's talking about, the idea of him being wrong about something, about discovering that he's been wrong about something, whether it's in science or just, you know, something that he has believed about the world in general, the idea of being wrong was something that he absolutely takes joy in. The idea that, oh my God, you mean I've had that wrong all this time? And now you get to shake up your worldview. You know, he talked about, you know, how you have to rethink everything. And now possibly, hopefully, when you get to the end of this, you're going to see the world in a new way. And God, we need more of that. I mean, as people, we are so protective of our worldview. My wife claims she's an expert at being wrong. Oh, man. Now, you only think so. You're right way more than you think you are. Pessimists, they're so hard to deal with. But we're so protective of our worldview that a lot of people, we define ourselves by the opinions we have about stuff. And then when something challenges that, we've talked about this before, when something challenges your worldview, that's threatening. That's threatening to your idea of who you are as a person. So we dig in our heels. We refuse to accept new information. We refuse to learn from our experiences. But man, this guy has given me a view of what happens to the world if that's not how we are. What happens to the world if people could actually be thrilled about learning new things? Not just about learning new things, but learning that, oh my God, you mean I had this wrong this whole time? And this is really how it works, and being amazed and joyous in that. Wouldn't that be cool? I mean, look, because I tried to think of, as I prepared for this, I tried to think of some good examples for myself, and I couldn't come up with anything really big, which makes me feel sad, because, you know, I'm just like most people, that it's tough to admit when you're wrong. But I'm trying to get better about it. But I did think of, like, the other week, maybe 2 weeks ago, when I was talking to you guys about being able to watch a camera whose speed was so fast it could catch light in motion, like it actually filmed the speed of light. And when I first saw that was a headline on whatever article, when I saw the headline or when I saw the first, it was a little film clip I saw. And they claimed that you know, this was an actual slow motion film of light moving through a bottle. And my first instinct was to call bullshit. I'm like, there's no way. There's absolutely no way. I mean, it was an absolute impossibility. And then, you know, but of course, when I come across a claim like that, my first instinct is I have to go research it. I have to go look it up, find out, mostly because I was going to go out and prove it wrong. And I was going to take a little joy in proving them wrong because I'm smug like that. And it turns out that it was right. It was actually what it claimed to be. And I'm telling you, I had to find like 3, 4, 5 articles all saying the same thing. I had to get information directly from MIT saying that yes, this was their camera, that they did this and this and this. Cause I was not going to believe it just based on some news articles from some, you know, website or magazine that I barely knew about. Man, I had to get it right from the horse's mouth. No matter how many times I saw it, man, I needed something more reliable. I was really resisting this. But then it turns out that, hey, we really do have cameras so fast they can film light in motion. That's awesome. And again, it was so surprising to me. It shook me to realize that I hadn't even realized that this was a possibility. And so thus I brought it to you guys and I shared it because that's awesome. That is so awesome. So if I could just be more like that, if we could all be more like that, but I can't control what you guys do. So I'm going to try and be more like that. Look, I'm already working on trying to listen better, trying to ask questions without injecting my own preconceived notions into the questions I'm asking, without being confrontational in my seeking of others' opinions, and I'm still not very good at that, but I'm working on it. And then now on top of that, I got to be open to the possibility that I might be wrong. And I try and do that, but I got to get better about it. Because, God, this, seriously, go listen to Adam Ruins Everything. It was a good episode. It was a lot of fun. And I really enjoyed it. And it was just, I don't know, eye-opening for me. I felt good about it. So, hey, that's it for science. Now, what is it? Oh, see, if I scroll down, I would see it. There it is. Now it's time for a Nerd Culture Report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you are very, very close. Okay, so we're in Shopko the other day. I told you about that when we were being spied on. And while we're in Shopko looking for pants, Eli, my third son, my 14-year-old, he spots a shirt, and he calls me over to look at this T-shirt and says, can they do that? I mean, I know they can do that, but is that appropriate, really? And it is a picture of an American flag hung vertically. And, man, I feel like I've told this story before. I feel like I've told it to you guys before, but if I have, I apologize, but I'm going to tell it again. And it's an American flag hung vertically, and the, stars in the blue field, the stars are all made of bullet holes. And that was his concern, is that really bullet holes in a flag, and that's our T-shirt? That's something to be proud of? I don't get it. And the slogan underneath it is just Winchester. So it's not even the flag with bullet holes. It's that the flag with bullet holes is being put on a T-shirt as an advertisement for a gun. And to me, I wouldn't even have thought twice looking at that, except that he questioned me on it. And I'm like, you know, yes, that sort of stuff. The idea that we use images of death in our patriotism. That's a little disturbing. I mean, I'm not part of that particular culture. I'm adjacent to it, I suppose. But it got me to thinking about how often nowadays you see the Punisher skull being used in combination with, especially with the Stars and Stripes, but being used in combination with patriotic symbols to represent America and patriotism. The Punisher skull. And that has always bothered me. You know the skull that the Punisher has on the front of his shirt? I have a Punisher T-shirt. You know the skull with the big long thing in front with the teeth? Do you know the skull I'm talking about? Hold on. No one needs me to give him a visual. Just a second. Okay, there. We got the visual, and I suppose it's probably a good thing that he's not all that familiar with Punisher. Punisher's some pretty serious stuff if you get down to the philosophy of it. So, anyway, do a search. Go do a Google image search for Punisher insignia, and you will find all sorts of military badges. I mean, like, it is, the Punisher skull is now part of the official insignia of many military units. There's at least one police force that they have their cars all done in black, and the Punisher skull is on the hood of the car, police car. And that's what you see coming at you, is a police car with a black car with a big white Punisher skull on the front. That is just, that it astounds me that we use it that way. That, again, it's in military insignia. You can get it in all sorts of badges and patches, and it's worked into logos with the stars and stripes, and it's all over. It's very, very popular. And now to me, I would have thought, if I was going to use a superhero in my patriotic insignia, what superhero would you use in your patriotic insignia?
The one that's literally red, white, and blue, Spider-Man?
No! No! Bad. Thank you, Lisa.
Oh, yeah,
Captain America, the one who has America in his name.
Yeah.
And he has literal red, white, and blue stars and stripes on his uniform. All right? That would be my thought. But,
yeah.
See, I'm biased because Captain America is my favorite. I love Captain America. I mean, Punisher has some good stories, and I enjoy watching The Punisher, but I don't...
Wonder Woman.
Oh, so good. I would love having Wonder Woman worked into military insignia. How cool is that? She is so badass. All right. Anyway, my thought is that Captain America seems like the logical choice. I mean, Steve Rogers, he is... He is
literal
the embodiment of American manliness out of World War II. I just love Captain America. He's such a good guy.
Rogers is actually a super soldier.
Right. He's a veteran himself. You would think that this would make perfect sense. So go out and do a search now for Captain America insignia, and you will find most of the images that you get are t-shirts, kids merchandise. It's just regular merchandising stuff. And there are some military units that you will see occasionally working. It's always Captain America's shield. They work his shield into something that they've got going on. And I think that's pretty cool. But if you want to come down to patriotism, if you want to come down to the militia types, the alt-right types, the Punisher is just everywhere. It's ubiquitous. It's really, it's on everything. And so thus, you know, this Winchester shirt with the bullet holes for stars is right there in that vein. It's very similar. It is representations of violence, combined with patriotism. And so I'm trying to figure out why this happens. And it turns out that I'm one of the few people who seems to wonder why there's this obsession, with Punisher. But I found a couple articles, and the one that I liked best is the explanation: there's two aspects of the Punisher that make him really, really attractive, especially to military types. Is first, the Punisher is willing to do whatever it takes to get the job done. That is his defining quality, really, is that whatever it takes, he's going to do it, period. I mean, he identifies who the bad guys are, and he takes care of bad guys, and he keeps the good people safe, period. That's his whole job, all right? And that, if you are a police officer, if you are a soldier, I can see identifying with that, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. When you dig deeper into who the Punisher is and what his actual morals and motivation are, yeah, then it becomes a little ickier and creepier, but most people aren't digging that deep. What they see is a guy who is a badass, and he gets it done. And this author, and I don't know how much I buy into this part, but it was interesting. This author also continued to say that there's also, if you're a soldier, a lot of times you're in situations where maybe the morality of what you're doing is not immediately obvious to outside observers. Maybe it's not even immediately obvious to yourself. You know that you're here fighting bad guys, and you know you're getting the job done, but sometimes you look around at the things that you've done and you think, you're taking actions that during peacetime, you know, no sane person is going to be doing. I mean, part of your job is to potentially kill people, and that's disturbing. And it is a moral issue for some people, should be. And thus, when you talk about the Punisher, you're talking about someone who, he's not questioning the morality of it. All he sees is that here's the end result, is that we have to take care of these bad guys, period. And yes, are we going to do some questionable things along the way? Yeah, but that's the price you pay. That's what you have to do if you want to get the job done. All right, you know what? I said maybe I didn't buy into it, but no, that seems to make some sense. And I get it, but I just find it disappointing. Knowing who the Punisher is, you know, knowing that, you know, all of those things that make him so attractive are also coupled with the idea that this is a guy who, doesn't give a crap about the law. He is willing to completely disregard due process. He's, you know, the rights of others don't figure into any of his actions. He's very much, a perfect authoritarian agent, really, in that he's willing to go out there and just do it. I'm maybe mixing my metaphor here, but it's disturbing. I would love to see Captain America as more, as something that was more prominent, because, you know, again, I love Captain America, but also, part of what I love about Captain America is his willing to take a stand against anybody that he sees as violating American principles. And that means that sometimes he has to stand up to authority. He has to question authority and say, look, is this really the right thing for us to be doing? I mean, there's been scenes where the government has asked Steve Rogers to do things that he wasn't cool with doing, take actions that, you know, that they deemed were necessary for the greater good, but he didn't feel were appropriate or consistent with his values. And he turned in his shield and he turned in his uniform and he resigned over that, because that's who Steve Rogers is. And I personally think that questioning of authority, that willingness to stand up for your beliefs in that way, I think that is really much truer to the American ideal that I want to hold with. The idea that yes, you need to love your country and you need to want to make things better for everyone in your nation, but you also need to respect the rights of others and you need to question authority when things are going wrong. You need to work towards positive change within the system if that's what it takes. And it's anyway, maybe I'm being too idealistic. I don't know. It was just, again, to me, the idea that this whole Punisher versus Captain America dichotomy, I get it. I really do. It just disappoints me. So, you know, seriously, if you find yourself an opportunity to design some patriotic military insignia, try and work in Captain America. That just as a favor to me. That would be super cool. But now it's time for the Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums, and I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And my first number today is 69, dude. 69 is from... There it is. 69 is from Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Darks says, what was your favorite 80s fad? Rubik's Cube. When I think 80s fad, I think Rubik's Cube. And I always loved the Rubik's Cube. I still do. I can't pass one by without picking it up and playing with it. What, you got a better 80s fad? Oh, okay. What about for you? Oh, she liked fluorescent clothing, the fluorescent bows for your hair, the day glow kind of fashion. Yeah, that was very 80s. That was very cool. So that one was easy. But now the second part of this question, how about 90s fads? 90s? See, I don't know. Because I saw that was the full question, and so as we're talking back and forth, I was trying to come up with stuff, and I got nothing. I mean, what came out of the 90s that...
Light bulb?
Light bulbs were invented over 100 years ago. I'm talking about stuff from the 90s, from when when mom and dad were first married and your older brothers were little kids. And, I mean, snap bracelets? What came out of the 90s? Yeah, Tamagotchis. There's a good one. That's
Tamagotchis.
Oh God, you don't even want to know what Tamagotchis are. They're little tiny electronic devices that they were like supposed to be like pets, and so you would have to hit the buttons to feed them and hit the buttons to give them attention. It's like what's the Sim Pet stuff? Like the cats and dogs that we had Sim stuff for. It was like that, but really primitive. Pacifiers? Oh, I barely remember. Yeah, teenagers with pacifiers. I remember that. High-waisted mom jeans. Do we miss those? Pokemon and Power Rangers both started becoming big in the 90s. But see, again, I none of that resonates with me. I was at the wrong age for that. No, see, now Mario came out, I think the first Donkey Kong game with Mario when it came out in 1980. Or 82, something like that. It was early.
Wait, hold on.
But
we can also count 1890s.
That's true. That's true. We could come up with our favorite fads from the 1890s.
Because those are also 90s.
steam-powered cars. Oh, that was, you remember steam-powered cars? Oh, man. You had to be really rich, but my friend Eddie had one. They were so cool. So he had everything. He had a green machine when everyone else was just riding around on big wheels. He had a steam-powered car. So anyway, yeah, like I said, the 90s just wasn't my era. I was newly married. Oh, Beanie Babies are 90s. That's good. See, she's doing my research for me. She's a good woman. But yeah, none of that is, there's nothing in there that I'm nostalgic for. There was none of that that I was really into at the time that I thought, was super cool. I mean, maybe grunge music? Maybe? What do you got, Lisa? What? What, you? What? Okay, hold on. I need some more explanation. No, that's true. That's true. I was only into Lisa in the 90s. In fact, I think we met in 1990. So, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, 90s were all about my wife. That's about it. So, I mean, we were getting married, we were having kids, that was it. So, hold on. See, now we get to move on. 19. 19 comes from... Da, 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 da. There it is. Kaz. Kaz says, what game idea did you dream up only to find out that it was already published? That's easy. A game called Tabloid. And I can't remember if the game I came up with was Tabloid or if the game that I found was named Tabloid. But either way, my brother found a copy of it, I think at a garage sale or something like that, and gave it to me years ago. But we had come up with this idea of playing a game called Tabloid, where you are a tabloid reporter, and the idea is all the stuff that you see in the Weekly World News, all the weird Bigfoot, UFO, Batboy stories, all of these things are real. But there's some secret conspiracy for why they all get covered up, and we're the only newspaper that prints them, and yet nobody ever believes us. And we thought this was super cool, this whole idea of a role-playing game where you get to play a tabloid reporter getting into these weird supernatural situations, and you'd play it out kind of as a comedy. And then it turns out that TSR, actually, the original TSR that made Dungeons & Dragons, had published a role-playing game about being a tabloid reporter, and all the stuff is real. And their exact take on it was different from the ideas we were having, but you know, it was close enough that it's like, crap, now it's been done. 71. 71 comes from someone who listens to this podcast, I bet. Yes, it's from Kyle. It is someone who listens to this podcast. Kyle says, text me this. Okay, I'm going to text him. I have to say, what's up, bro? And then see if he texts back before the show is over. So let me pause so you don't have to listen to me typing. Message sent. We'll see what happens. 63. 63 is from Talvin. Talvin says, besides Tolkien, what other fantasy novelists or series have had a major influence on you? The Chronicles of Narnia was one. That was my earliest fantasy series that just absolutely hooked me. Anne McCaffrey's Pern series, The Dragon Riders of Pern, and then everything from Pern after that was huge for me. I read that whole series, well, at least I read the original three at least twice, and then started getting through all of the other ones as well. What's the White Gold Wielder? The Thomas Covenant series. I can't remember the names of all three of them, but what, Lord Foul's Bane, White Gold Wielder, I can't remember the other one. Anyway, those three were amazing. And then there was a follow-up sequel to it, it didn't work quite as well. I'm sure there were a lot of others, but that was... Oh, hold on. It's Kyle.
We're pretty sure.
It's got to be Kyle. Kyle! Oh, my God, no. Oh, snap. This is it. You're doing the Podomatic. Oh, shit. Here we go. Trump sucks. That's what Kyle says. Good job, Kyle. Hold on.
You I have to...
Good job.
No, you need to tell me that.
Kyle. Yeah, be honest. All right, there we go. Oh, that was awesome. That turned out pretty well. 70. Yeah, my wife's right. I should have just texted back and said, no, I just wonder how it's going, man. I miss you. So, 72. 72 is from, that's really funny, is from Produce Farmer. Hey, Produce Farmer. He says, what's the animal or bug that creeps you out the most? This is easy. Millipedes. Centipedes and millipedes are creepy in general, but the one that gets me the most is the silverfish. These little millipede bastards that they're like, I get why they call them silverfish, because it, when they come crawling across the floor, they're like all wavy and boneless. And I mean, I know they're boneless because they're arthropods, but they look like they're swimming across the floor at you, and they're just, it's just hideous. Usually I encounter them in my yard. You know, you like turn over something and there they are. But man, the one or two times that you see one in your house, it's like, oh no. I hate those things. They are the worst. Anything else? I don't have a problem with roaches, so roaches would probably creep me out too, just because you know that where there's one, there's 8 billion. But other stuff in my house, you know, we get crickets that fall in the cracks in the basement window, and crickets, they're just noisy until they die. They don't do anything. You know, spiders, who doesn't like spiders? They're fine. But
sometimes,
but millipedes, and especially the silverfish, the worst. Okay, but, let's see. He says, are they by any chance the kind that could be unwanted household pets? Yeah, well, they could be. Unwanted household pests. He didn't say pets. He said pests. And yes, technically they could be. They usually aren't, but the silverfish, but they could be. I mean, like I say, it's not like I haven't seen one in my house before. It's just, it's a rare thing. And I don't know if they're like the crickets where they get in and then they just die, but I have no idea. I've never looked up the biology of silverfish, but, oh, I hate them. Oh, God, they're terrifying. 18. 18 comes from, this one is also from Mrs. Darks, and she says, bed, wed, or behead. Shatner's Kirk, oh, I'm glad you specified which Kirk, Picard, or Janeway.
I have no idea with this. I don't play Pokemon, so I'll just leave this to you.
Good answer, kid. They're Star Trek captains.
Oh.
I will wind up, you know, sadly, I'm going to have to kill Janeway, and I hate to do that because I really like Captain Janeway, but she's just not... Because if you're going to marry one of these three, you got to marry Picard. Picard is the guy, doesn't just to be with him all the time. How cool is this dude, right? I mean, he's smart. He's sophisticated. He's got all sorts of great stories. He's just a good guy. All right. So Picard is the one to marry. And then, you know, if you're going to have the one night stand, I mean, you know, which one of them screams sexuality more than Kirk? I mean, he just, you know.
Who's Kirk?
Captain Kirk. The original Captain Kirk from the first Star Trek series back in the 60s. Played by William Shatner. I know. I try to educate them. Yes, it's just really difficult. I have four of them. Yeah, you try and bring these kids up right, and yet, yeah, there's so many of them, and I can't remember which ones I've showed what. So, apparently Star Trek is not in Noah's wheelhouse, and I feel kind of bad about that.
I also
that.
Don't think it's so,
Eli's. No, Aiden. probably not Eli's. No, Aiden would know who all these people were.
Okay.
But, well, he probably wouldn't know Janeway. But anyway, yeah, that's going to be my answer, though. 33 comes from Talvin. Talvin says, favorite Halloween candy?
Candy corn. I just know that's his.
Good guess, but no, it's not.
What? You eat it all the time. You eat it like popcorn.
I do love candy corn stolen from other people's desks. Yes. Or Nana just sent us a whole bunch of candy corn. And so the easy answer is I take it to work and then I put it in a candy dish on Yancey's desk. And then that way, whenever I want some, I'm stealing it from his desk, and then it tastes awesome. Yeah, I like candy corn a lot. But no, probably my favorite candy at Halloween, and it's not even, well, okay. When we're talking Halloween candy, like stuff you're actually going to get while you're trick-or-treating, it is the Tootsie Roll Fruit Chews. Vanilla specifically is my favorite, but I like any and all of them, even the banana. I like all of the fruit chews. It's vanilla first, and then cherry, and then lime, and then orange, and then lemon. And then if they have banana, I'll take banana too. But I love those. If it's candy available at Halloween, and you don't normally get these in your bags, but at any holiday, the Reese's peanut butter whatever, whether it's peanut butter pumpkins at Halloween or eggs at Easter or Christmas trees at Christmas time, I mean, I like a good Reese's peanut butter cup, but like these peanut butter shapes that they have just have more peanut butter per chocolate, and I really like the balance of peanut butter to chocolate in the eggs and pumpkins and trees more than I do the regular Reese's peanut butter cups, and so they are way better, but that's just me. 42. Oh, I expect big things out of this one. Let's see. Yeah, my wife's into Milk Duds. That's her movie candy. That's her Halloween candy. That's and Milk Duds are awesome. Don't get me wrong. Who doesn't like chocolate and caramel? But what is your favorite season of the year? Well, my favorite season is fall. I really like fall. Or at least for weather, I like fall. For actual enjoyment, I get a big kick out of summer just because my wife and kids are home all summer, and that's really awesome. But if everything else was equal, I enjoy the autumn just because it's, I don't know, it's the typical answer everybody gives is that, oh, hey, you know, it's cool enough that you're not sweating. You could wear a jacket if you wanted to, but you don't have to. People like spring and they like fall for exactly those reasons, is that the weather is way more pleasant. You don't get the sweltering hot of summer, the bitter cold of winter, which, you know, living in Nebraska, summer is super, super hot and winter is super, super cold. So when we get those in-betweens, we enjoy that.
One time Earth forgot what season it was for a day and it was winter, but we were in summer, basically.
Yeah, that's true. We've had quite the variation the last few years. So, we'll have days in the middle of January when everything melts off and we've got a 70-degree day for no reason whatsoever. So
and then it's back to the normal again the next day.
Oh, 69. Can't do that one. Number 13.
Why can't we do 69?
Because we already did 69. It was the first one that came up.
Oh.
Yep. Number 13 is from Kyle. Kyle says, what is the most complicated repair or fix you've ever made to something? Let me think. I have rebuilt some pieces inside of printers, but nothing horribly complex. That's just work stuff. But for home repairs, it was replacing the heating element in the dryer was pretty awesome. That was one of my first really big ones. And then in our old van, replacing the water pump in the van that I did on my own. And I was really proud of both of those because I didn't know that I could do it. But it turns out I could because, you know, YouTube's my friend and all. 89. And you guys have been around for both of those. I know I've talked about them on the podcast. So 89 comes from... There it is. It's from Kyle again. Kyle says, go to my Facebook page and read the most recent post of mine. Any thoughts? Well, it's going to be a dad joke, but let me go look. Okay, Kyle's most recent post is he shared a post from March for Science. And the thing says, today is election day, so this was an original post from November 7th, but Kyle just reposted it 14 minutes ago. It says, today is election day, please don't stay home, go out there and vote for science, find your polling place. And then they have a picture. You want to read that one off, Noah?
You don't cure cancer by posting statements on social networks. You cure cancer by voting for parties who don't cut funds on scientific research and don't promote
pseudoscience. Very good. All right. Cool. Now, that was just sharing a post. The last actual post he made was November 11th, so yesterday, where he says, Auburn is manhandling Georgia. The state of Alabama has the two scariest teams right now in college football. So, there you go. That was his last actual post in his words. So, let's do a couple more. 13. I think we just did 13. 05. I like that one. 05 is from Daz. Daz says, bed, wed, or behead, Shakespeare, J.R.R. Tolkien, and J.K. Rowling. I will bed Shakespeare because he's a romantic and I don't know, he seems fun that way. I will marry J.K. Rowling because she has a brain in her head and she seems very intelligent and would be engaging to talk to. And, you know, we have similar interests. We both like Harry Potter. So cool. And then
that just,
right. Thus, we both like Harry Potter. And then,
if I was old enough, I will.
She is amazingly wealthy and could maintain me in the lifestyle to which I've become accustomed or something better. And then that only leaves me to kill off J.R.R. Tolkien because, he's old and stuffy and conservative and kind of a racist. So, we'll just let him go. I mean, not that I don't love Lord of the Rings. I do, but yeah, that doesn't mean I have to like Tolkien that much. So there you go. 38. And 38 is from, Phoebe.
Can we do one more?
Phoebe says, well, you don't even know what this one is. What if this one takes us 20 minutes? You don't know. Phoebe says, if you were able to keep an exotic pet, all right, this is for you, Noah. If you were able to keep an exotic pet, any animal you want, and it was ethical for you to do so, so you don't have to worry about keeping it too confined or that it's, you know, that it's suffering being in your care or whatever. And it has to be an animal that is not normally considered a pet in the United States. What animal would you choose and why?
I'd personally go with, this is tough.
Okay.
I'm trying to think.
I'm going to get myself a dolphin. In fact, probably a couple of dolphins, which will require that we will have to have a yard with a much larger tank, because even though we've already said that ethics of this doesn't really matter all that much, that the animal's going to be just fine, I know we're stipulating that, but the fun of a dolphin is having the giant, you know, double Olympic-sized pool to swim around in with it and just hang out. So let's assume that the giant tank comes with the dolphin. And then I will learn to speak their language. I will teach them how to read. We'll play chess together. It will be awesome. Dolphins are great. What about you? You got anything yet?
I think I do.
Okay, what do you think you have?
Lion.
A lion?
Yeah.
All right. See?
Because then later on in life I could potty train it and stuff and then just go riding out into the streets on a lion.
No, you know what?
I could also ride it to the store and buy eggs.
You don't have to potty train it. Who's going to argue with a lion? He'll crap wherever he wants.
Yeah.
Lisa wants a descented skunk. Again, no ethical concerns here. We can descent that skunk if we want. She wants the descented skunk because it would be a lot like having a cat in the house, except then when she needs to get rid of people, like that guy who keeps letting his dog crap on our lawn, you just send the skunk out there. Yeah, you sick a skunk on somebody, they ain't coming back.
Or someone is super persistent in trying to sell you stuff at your door. You just open your door, push your skunk out of it. Yeah,
exactly.
They will go running.
Exactly. So, all right, you said one more?
Yes.
All right, this one's for Noah, 52. I hope it is a kid-appropriate question.
Otherwise, we're doomed.
52 is from Mrs. Darks. What is the hardest accent for you to understand? That really depends. Because I have heard, I mean, it depends on how thick the accent is. It depends on, I mean, because I've heard people with mild Indian accents that don't, you know, that don't bother me at all. I've heard people with much heavier Indian accents where I have to keep asking them to repeat it. But I could say the same thing of someone with a really thick Scottish brogue. I mean, there's some videos online that you can watch these guys from Scotland or Ireland or even from, you know, somewhere in London. I can't name all the English accents, that they get into a heated argument with each other, and it's like, I have no clue what they're saying. I mean, they're speaking English. It is their native language. They invented it before we took it from them, and I don't have a clue. So it really depends on the person, because I've seen any accent become incomprehensible. But most of the time, I don't have a whole lot of problem. There's a lot of time that the TV will...
I'm pausing.
Hold on. I bet it's a telemarketer, but let's pause anyway.
We have just gained a call from Eli that we will be picking him up right now. There will be a long pause currently.
Yeah, we have to go get Eli. He just got done with one act, and then I'm going to run them home. But I'll be back, and it'll be a little bit. So that just means we get more listener betrayal because, you know, it'll have to wait. So I'll be right back. And I'm back. Let's turn it over to GLaDOS for a recap of this week's episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Weezer's In the Garage, and She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Don't forget, this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network. Angry Geeks Versus, Me Like Trivia, and Nerd Pride Radio itself. Quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people. If you want to help out Nerd Pride, subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or in whatever podcatcher you use. And write us a nice review. Write me a nice review. They make a big difference, especially if you give me 5 stars. That's the big deal. If you want to do something really nice for the podcast, recommend it to your friends. Because seriously, you're enjoying it. So tell somebody. Let them know. Let other people enjoy it. Word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Remember, I'm always looking for you listeners to do my work for me, so don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, please, please send it to me. Save me all of this grueling research. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me, come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. You'll sign up there, send me a message, we'll hang out together. We will become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. And now it is time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, or 5 minutes in this week's case, I go out to my forums, I go out to Facebook, and I say, hey guys, I am recording anything you post up. I will read off at the end of the podcast, which is what I'm doing right now. So, first up, we'll start at my website at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. And I said, ask me anything. And then I also said, tell me about a TV series available on Netflix, Amazon Prime, or Hulu that you don't think I've seen, but I should definitely watch. So it starts with Eliahad, my friend Dave. And Dave says, how awesome is Flameblade? That's his brother Dan who played with us. I already explained how awesome he is. He was amazingly awesome. He's really good at the game. He provides awesome feedback. I think if anyone is going to be showing us where there are places to break this game that we need to be watching out for, I think he's the guy to do it. So really cool. And also, if you want to go back and just, you know, read him verbatim what I said earlier about him, that would be awesome too. Cause Dave says, talk about how awesome he is and I will tell him what you said. Because Dan can't hear, so therefore he doesn't listen to the podcast. Then, in answer to my other question, Dave says, have you seen Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return? You haven't talked about it, but I imagine you'd like it. Yeah, you know what? I imagine I would, and I haven't checked it out yet. I may have started watching the first episode, I think I was watching the old series again, just to kind of get back in the spirit of it. And I wound up not liking the original very much. It's a little too slow. But I haven't tried the new one yet. I hear that the jokes come really fast and furious in it. I hear it's really good. And, you know, it's got Felicia Day in it. So, I'll check it out. I think that is a good recommendation. That's a good one to, when Lisa has already fallen asleep and I need something to kill, you know, half hour, 45 minutes before I go to bed. That's a good one to start because you can kind of watch that one in pieces. So, and then he says also, you know, if you haven't talked about the last Godball playtest, you really should. It just reinforces how awesome Flame and Phoebe are. I did. So we're all covered. Then my brother Kyle says, have you seen Black Mirror? Oh, have I seen Black Mirror? I love Black Mirror. I really, all three seasons, it is spectacular. If you have not watched Black Mirror, people, I can't tell you often enough. It's really good. It's a British series, and it's very Twilight Zone-y, except it deals with issues of modern technology, but in kind of Twilight Zone-y situations. It's super good, every episode. He also says, Riverdale is scratching my family's itch for 90210 trash. I've never been into 90210 trash, and Riverdale, the idea doesn't appeal to me. But, you know, I'm willing to try anything, I suppose, but that's low on my list. I doubt I'll get to it. And then there's a single season series on Amazon called Mad Dogs, which is incredible, but no one ever talks about it. Oh, all right. I know I have heard Mad Dogs. I can't remember who said it. I just remember someone said Mad Dogs. Wow, I really liked that. But okay, I will check that one out. That one definitely goes on my list. And you say that one's on Amazon Prime. So all right, I will put that on my list tonight. All right. And then that's it for my forums. But if I go out to Facebook, I have already gotten lots of notifications that people are talking, and holy crap, they are. This is great. Starts off with my brother Kyle saying, dude, Thor, for reals. Yeah, I know. I think Kyle liked Thor as much as I did, because Thor is just smashing good fun. You go in and you have a good time watching Thor, and that's all there is to it. Thor is awesome. Then Iantha replies and says, I loved Poison Ivy since I was a child. Oh, very cool. Iantha says, also, I just discovered that I have failed as a parent. My child is 16 and has never seen a Charlie Brown Christmas. Wow. I don't think my children have ever seen a Charlie Brown Christmas, although I will lay you money, my two oldest ones, just through memes and cultural references. I bet they know the climactic Christmas tree scene and speech from Linus, or at least they understand the gist of it. Like if I sat down and watched it with them, they'd get to that scene and go, oh, that's where that all comes from. So, but I don't know that they've actually seen it. That's interesting. Then Daniel, this is Dan, Dave's brother. Dan says, my favorite role-playing character is Mike Jones. He is a real character, that one. You're funny, Dan. Tell him I said he was funny. All right. And then my brother Kyle says, in Pathfinder, I just made a tattooed sorcerer that only casts conjuration and summoning spells. He's weak, slow, and fat, but great at summoning monsters. I'm playing him as the ultimate dungeon master. I am insulted by that. Pat, you should be insulted by that. That is terrible. Ultimate Dungeon Master. No, Pat's the Ultimate Dungeon Master, and he's nowhere near fat. He's like a little miniature person. Oh, that's rude. Although, it does sound like an awesome character. I'm assuming you're being serious about that part. James Owens? I played a kid, just an actual child, in the old West End Games Die 6 Star Wars RPG. Oh, that sounds badass already. Standard equipment included a bottle of soda, a piece of string, and, quote, a small animal, live or dead, your choice, end quote. Totally useless in combat, but great for finding trouble and starting combat. Oh, that's cool. I bet that would be a lot of fun. I can see getting into that one. I like playing kid characters. I like game mastering for kid characters. I think there's it's easy to get into the mindset because we've all been kids, and it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Sarah Beth says, I wish I could say Sam. That's her current character in our Pathfinder campaign. Sam is a cleric, a chosen of Desna, who is really cool. She says, I wish I could say Sam, but she's just not speaking to me, and I wish she would. Oh, that's a shame. I really like her. All right. She says, I'm going to say Power Ranger. She was pretty awesome. Power was her character from our last Paranoia game, before this current one. And And yeah, that was, I told you guys all about it, but it was, you know, Paranoia is meant to be a joke game. It's a throwaway, slapstick, violent, but there are times that you can get into a character in it, and even in that sort of weird environment, it's still cool to put yourself in that role and actually play as them, react as them, understand, you know, and her and, Talvin's character took the game really seriously, and it was very interesting. So cool. Ooh, and then my wife. That's even better. My wife says Herc from our early Paranoia games. Oh yeah. Oh, Herc Arlees. He was awesome. He was, Herc was a great one. He was actually, Steve Buscemi. And that was the, he looked exactly like Steve Buscemi, and he was a little weasel bastard of a character. He was supposed to look like Steve Buscemi and play like whoever that weasel guy was from, the 1999 Mummy with Brendan Fraser, whoever that weasel guy was that kept turning on everybody. And then eventually got, Benny! That's right! His name was Benny. And he got devoured by scarab beetles at the end, for his greed. But that was the character she wanted to play. And, he was spectacular. He was so funny. And, I mean, he really was just a weasel bastard of a character. And, she really got into it. Like, I've told you guys, I think, but it doesn't matter. The, whenever he killed somebody in the game, he would then, Lisa would go and find and design a condolence card that says, sorry you got killed. And then would send a condolence card to that person and would use pictures of Steve Buscemi in the card. And the best one was, Steve Buscemi's role in Adam Sandler's, Billy Madison. And no, it wasn't Billy Madison. Was it? Which one was it where he goes back to school? Is that Billy Madison? I think it is. But there is, Steve Buscemi is in that one, and there's a shot of Steve Buscemi, he gets a call from Adam Sandler's character, Billy, saying, you know, apologizing for everything he ever did. And so then Steve says, oh, no, that's all right. That's totally cool. I get it. No, it's fine. And then after they hang up, Buscemi gets up from his bed, crosses the room, and there's a big list of people I need to kill. And on his people to kill list, he then crosses off Billy Madison's name. And so Lisa used that picture of Steve Buscemi crossing a name off the people to kill list and says, sorry, you got killed. Anyway, it entertained the crap out of me. But anyway, she continues. It says, it was my first time playing any role-playing game, and I found out what I had been missing all of those years. Yeah, see, that is cool, isn't it? That is awesome stuff. So, God, these are good answers. You guys are the best. All right, and then that's the end. We're all done. So, I love you guys. You are awesome. I appreciate you showing up. I appreciate all the contributions this week. You guys are really good. Apparently, if I ask better questions, you guys respond in spades, don't you? You guys are great. So, I will try and keep doing that and see if, and also, you notice I use different questions on Facebook and on my forums because some of you like to respond in both places. So I want to make sure you get an opportunity to say something different in each place, which I think is cool. So thank you very much. I'll see you guys next week. It's been awesome. Bye.